This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Wawinjeka. Joy 94.9 would like to acknowledge and pay respect to the sovereign peoples of the past, present and future generations of the Kulin Nations on whose unceded land we work, live and broadcast from. We would also like to acknowledge all our brother boys and sister girls of the LGBTI communities. A silent storm begins to brew in an ancient land of darkness. With tumultuous force from the crust of the earth, two worlds come together as one, from the past and the present, celebrating culture and spirit, paving the pathway to our future. It's time for dreaming. Urban dreaming. Finding your voice. Finding your spirit. Joy 94.9.
Yes, good evening. Welcome to Urban Dreaming. This is Sarami on the mic.
Heya, it's Maddie back again.
Hi, Declan.
Yes, so unfortunately we don't have Miscellaneous again tonight, but she'll be on definitely next week. She's a busy, busy girl, that one. And Chris Tate is not on the panel. We actually have JJ. How are you, JJ?
I can't speak.
It's all good. All right, guys, we've got a really interesting show tonight. But before we begin, of course, we've got to do our own acknowledgement to country, and that is to make sure that we are acknowledging the country of the Kulin Nation and Wurundjeri land in which we stand on. And, yeah, what a joy it is to have you guys in the studio with us.
Thank you.
Yeah, once again, I think this will become an ongoing, hopefully, the dream team of Urban Dreaming.
It is, really. It's a party in here, isn't it? There's so much to talk about tonight. So it is massive. And if you want to get in on the chat, make sure you do give us a buzz on 0427JOY949. You can text us in and tell us what you're thinking, how you're feeling.
And these boys looking very colourful, I must say. It looks like Maddie's wearing a NAIDOC. What, I can't really read it properly.
Yeah, I got the NAIDOC 2017 jacket.
There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to work out how to work some yellow into this, but red and black, a small amount of yellow.
I think you got more of the rustic colours, man. So, I'm just in my all black. So, guys, look, we always make sure we try to have a deadly show here and to make sure that we really inform community and the world in what we do. Urban Dreaming is all about getting in touch with culture and spirit and learning, I guess, a lot of lessons on the way in regards to how we can contribute towards bridging the gap, you know, towards a better understanding with both worlds. I think there's an inclination to want to, I guess, really get out there and use the arts as a medium, as a tool that will help, you know. I think sometimes we don't like to just, there's no other way sometimes. Just, you know, we think protesting is the only way, but there's other ways that you can protest and you can do silent vigils as well. So, just to acknowledge the show for this evening, can you let us know what's going on, Maddie?
Yeah, for sure. There's heaps going on at the moment. And, you know, in terms of using arts as a way to protest, I mean, there's also things like footy. You know, it's Reconciliation Week. We've just had the footy round, so we're going to have a little chat about that. We have a great guest in with us today, BB Backhouse. He's going to chat to us about the raising of the flag in Federation Square in a little bit. We're going to have a little bit of a chat about the 50-year anniversary of the referendum. So it's massive. There's going to be so much great stuff. We've got Michael Anderson, who's going to chat to us about the Uluru Statement as well. So huge, huge show.
Yeah, that only happened last week.
He's come a long way, Michael. Yeah.
He has indeed. So, yes. Yeah, that's something worthwhile to look out for. And what else is happening for the Radiothon?
For Radiothon, we still need Joy. You still need Joy. So, at the moment, if you get a membership with us or you renew your membership, you can go into the draw to win a whole bunch of prizes. The first prize is a Holden Astra worth about $27,000. So, it's a really good prize. And also, if you donate lots of $10, you go into the draw to win yourself a cruise to New Caledonia. I think it's 8 nights, 9 days.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
God.
So any people can become a member, and it's easy as just giving us a call. And also knowing that, you know, while you're on the line with us too, we actually have, you can email us and have a chat with us as well. So feel free to give us a call. That's Joy 94.9, and the looking for the number. Where is it gone?
If you want to text us, 0427-JOY949. Tell us what you're doing this evening when you're listening to us, or email us on air at joy.org.au. We'd love to hear from you tonight.
There's a number, 0427-JOY94.9. Sorry, 94.9. Okay, guys, we're just going to have a quick little break, and we'll get back to you in a minute.
Urban Dreaming here on Joy 94.9. That song was Radical Sun from Human Behaviour, and that's one of Declan's favourite. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, he's a Kamilaroi man and Tongan, and he spent half his time in some of Australia's toughest prisons. He was a heroin addict when he was released at 21, but he's worked with Archie Roach, And he says, you know, music was really something that gave him a lot of strength. And, you know, he had some natural gifts and he has to appreciate what that gave him. And he's used, you know, a lot of his strengths and his insights. And he's been to Parkville Youth Justice Precinct and done special shows and talked to people. And, you know, I think having a mentor like Archie Roach who can identify with, you know, some of that struggle himself, it's really a great thing the way he's gone. And I mean, he's got a beautiful voice, you know, really fine voice.
I think it's really amazing how someone can empower themselves through music and knowing that you've been through so much experience, life experience in general, and getting to a point where you've hit so much hardship. But music is always seems to be the healer, doesn't it, for some reason?
Tames, what is it, soothes the savage beast.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really got something in it.
And Archie Roach is definitely a good example of that, and I think he's probably one of the main, I guess, when it comes to music, like because I've had the chance to really sit down and yarn and to work with him in regards to his music and where it comes from. And a lot of his, you know, personal hurt, and I think a lot of music in general, of course, is coming from the hurt, from the pain. And, of course, the joy too, don't forget.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, we've got to say, we've got a few songs, and they're, I think they're all joyful, but look, there's some dark themes as well. But, you know, the thing that pains me the most with Uncle Archie is we had the Year and Boy Festival, and I got to say, he stole a lot of people away to his show and, you know, took all those kids away who could have been down at the Butchers at North Melbourne. But, you know, all the best to him, because I'm not surprised at all that he did manage to do that.
Yeah, well, it's interesting in terms of music and storytelling being part of our culture or our sovereignty. So it's you know, that's I guess why we find so many incredible Indigenous artists that go to music to tell their stories or to make their way through. And you know, part of storytelling and finding about sovereignty and culture is Reconciliation Week, which we're in at the moment, and we've got a great guest on in just a moment. I'm going to get Suri to introduce. So when he is ready, he's going to do that. But in terms of Reconciliation Week, you guys might have seen a lot of the footy over the weekend, the Dreamtime at the G. Don't know whether you paid much attention to it or not, but it's really interesting to note that the Indigenous players in those rounds did change their Guernsey numbers to 67, and that's to represent the 50 years since the 1967 referendum. So our players, like Buddy Franklin, changed his number from number 23 to 67, and of course Shane Edwards changed to 67 as well, just to name a few of them.
Yeah, so the 1967 referendum was made, you know, it made history, and it's the 50th anniversary, and that's what we wanted to talk about as with our special guest. And because, you know, Australians weren't able to vote, Australian Aboriginal people weren't able to vote back in before the 67 amendment, so to the Constitution. So it allowed, you know, at that stage, Aboriginal people in the census and to basically, yeah, vote, you know, and to give us, I guess, a voice. And before I introduce our guest, I have to mention this fella. He's currently doing really amazing things in Melbourne. He's from the Kimberleys, and his background, he's actually a concert pianist and a music teacher as well. And we're speaking of music before, you know, and the idea of knowing that you can use your passion and your skills to actually, you know, create a platform again through the music and the industry that he works in is, you know, through the concerts. And, I've seen BB's work in regards to making our mob with strength, you know, and making our mob proud. So it's great. He's furthered his musical career by joining Short Black Opera. That was with Deborah Cheatham. And she actually took him under her wing, and she was looking at trying to get him to be the first conductor, Aboriginal conductor, which is amazing. And since then, he's just moved on. He's done some really amazing work now. He's currently at the Fed Square. He's a creative producer, and he's also done a lot of the Indigenous Arts mentorship programs and a lot of festivals, you know, and the list goes on, really. There's nothing this fella can't do, and he's in the studio right now with us, BB Backhouse.
Hello, how are you?
Good, hey. Good.
That's good.
So to begin with, it wasn't just Lonely last week that it happened for the 50th anniversary, but it was basically 3 years in the making to get to this point, yeah?
For the flags, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the flags at Federation Square was always it was just missing. I mean, I first started at Federation Square 3 years ago, and one of the first things I noticed was there's a real lack of Aboriginal acknowledgement on that site. You know, there is the plaque of acknowledgement for Tandetum, and there's an acknowledgement of the work that went behind it, but there were no flags. And so it did take, you know, some time to get it up and running, but we got there. And last Saturday, the 50th anniversary of the 67 referendum, the flags were raised permanently for the first time at Federation Square. And it was a really emotional, heartfelt event. A great turnout from the community, and we had some special guests come along. I mean, we had Auntie Gail Marbo fly down from Townsville to raise the Torres Strait Islander flag, and, you know, had our incredible Wurundjeri cousins and brothers and sisters raise the Aboriginal flag for us. It was beautiful.
Bibi, I'd love to hear what it is that seeing the flag in a public space means to you, because I know for me, you know, there's ironies you get sometimes, like down on Lygon Street now, they've lined it with "Let's take the next steps." But then sometimes you'll just see the Australian Union Jack flag and, you know, that kind of discrepancy. Having said that, I was really, really moved when I saw down in North Melbourne, there's a huge flag that flies every day, but it's recently we got the red, yellow and black up there. And, you know, it just felt good to see it out there in the material environment, you know. And after a long time when I'd always passed that flag and always wondered, you know, oh, where's the Aboriginal flag, or will I ever see it there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, you look at flags historically for non-Indigenous, you know, people, it's always been about, it's a symbol of conquer, and it's a symbol of what they own, and it's of ownership. And for Aboriginal people, or, you know, any Indigenous race across the earth, it's about pride and it's about identity. And I think for me, that was actually a really good question. It was a common question that was asked to me, is why do you need the flags flown? Why is it such a big deal? And it's when you fly the flag of an Aboriginal race, you're acknowledging their contributions to your society. You're acknowledging, you know, the efforts made on their behalf. You're acknowledging all of the crap that went on over the previous centuries. And so for me, that's what flying those flags represents, especially at a site such as Federation Square. It's taking ownership of the wrongs and it's making a right. And it's not a huge step, but it's a step.
And a really central place too, where people, you know, they might go through an entire trip throughout Australia and maybe never see an Aboriginal flag.
Yeah.
You know, it's really interesting too, because of the actual Fed Square, the stones actually are from the Kimberleys. So when I first went to the Fed Square, for some reason I was drawn to the place. I was wondering, why am I always drawn to this one specific place, even though it's, I guess, the hub of Melbourne and the central heart of Melbourne. But there was something about it specifically, energy-wise, and I only later found out, about a year later, actually, funny enough, that the stones are actually, yeah, transported from the Kimberleys. And it's hard, because it's a part of me was really unsure, like in regards to, you know, because a lot of stones, when we take it from country, it means it's not supposed to happen, for starters. But then I guess it may have, you know, there's a way of doing it, and they might have done it the proper way for me to feel good there. So I think that's the spiritual essence of what is a beautiful thing about it. And to top it off with the flag, that's just amazing, you know, to know that our mob are represented at last. How long has it taken, you know? And the thing is, the referendum, like, it's only been since 67, so that's not many years, man. That's like just under, what is that? I'm not very good at maths, guys.
Well, many people, I mean.
40 years, yeah? 50 years, yeah. So, it's a shame that it's never been there from the very beginning. So well done, BB, for doing that. And it's a shame I didn't get to go there that day. And I do regret it, because I know it was just such an amazing turnout. So many people were there. And, how did it feel for you personally, like, just to know that you were emceeing this event? You know, the idea of you speaking on behalf of our mob.
Well, the entire process, I wrote it actually took a 3-page proposal to the executive board, and you know, an additional 6 months of paperwork and finance and all of that sort of schmozzle. So, you know, it was a long process, but throughout that entire duration, it was never about me, and everyone kept saying, "Oh, well done, well done, well done." It is well done, but it's not my milestone; it's our people's milestone. But on the day, it was a real honour to be able to host the event and liaise with the community and present Fed Square's contribution to the community and the acknowledgements of our peoples. The moment the flags actually went up, I was still and I was silent. I couldn't speak for the first 5 minutes after they both went up. My heart was just so full, and all I could do was just smile and nod, and it was incredible.
And what's crazy that our mob still weren't even granted citizenship by the time of the referendum as well, because it took a few more years actually before we could actually vote.
I was going to say, yeah, there's that that common myth whereby people are always saying, well, it wasn't exactly the referendum that gave people the right to vote.
No.
Yeah, no, it wasn't the case. I think one thing it did do, and correct me if I'm wrong, was it gave the Commonwealth, the national government, sort of took the power from the states to legislate. And, you know, at the time, I mean, It was a real new beginning and led the way to the sort of 70s Nugget Coombs policies, because, you know, the states at that time were heavily assimilationist, protectionist, and there was beginning with Harold Holt, and then people like Whitlam were really looking to have that re-engagement and really to try and change the situation, which was just, you know, it was appalling at the time.
Yeah, that's, you know... You had the 67 referendum, it was passed, and then for several years after that, nothing came of it. And until Whitlam took office and actually said, well, let's take the next steps now. You know, the referendum wasn't the end, it was the beginning. So let's take this further and let's keep advancing the rights of our First Nations.
It's a good point too, because it is that political will. Often, I mean... these changes do depend upon political will, and you talk about Whitlam and that sort of leadership that, I mean, Indigenous people are always desperate for, but all Australians nowadays are very desperate for. And I got to say, you know, Gary Foley has written about that actually, that Harold Holt apparently, you know, was very interested in giving power to a body that would advise government, and it was done with serious intent, but... unfortunately, there was the fateful swim, and then John Gorton came, and there was a complete lack of leadership and will, obviously, at that point. And like you say, it wasn't till Whitlam that you saw actual leadership that builds upon that substantive change, you know. That's just the base.
We're going to actually play another track, and this track actually is Baker Boy. He's actually a rapper. He's a dancer. He's done with Chucky Mala before. He's a beautiful dancer. And he decided he wanted to do some rap in language, you know, and bloody deadly work, by the way. So check this out. This is Baker Boy with Cloud 9.
Hi, this is Alfie Akuri. You're listening to Urban Dreaming on Joy.
Joe, Baker Boy in the town. I'm on Cloud 9. They see you really humble, don't ever change, you become humble. Let you come in it, no one that I just think about all, don't ever turn back on Gare. Way, get like no one turn, do that effort, and you're billing out a cabaret. We can't fly high like an eagle, don't wanna see no ego. Don't think about it, let's go. Just hold on to my hands and let's go. Gotta do a baker boy, young man, not a boy. You think you throw me like a toy. I'm a human being, just like you and me. We are family, stop the jealousy. Come with me now, break it down. No side of town, stop being a clown. Be the person that's chasing the crown. So at the end of the day, you'll be found. So never back down, back down, back down. You wanna be as good as me, boy, better practice. Step back with the power of my blackness. You wanna be as good as me, boy, better practice. Step back with the power of my blackness.
Can't stop me now.
Can't stop me.
You can bring me down.
Bring me down.
Coming down, can't stop me now. You can bring me down. I'm on cloud nine. I'm not coming down.
can on the mirror, not kun numa bar mir. Whenever the truth comes out, your heart is ripping out. You gotta stay strong or die. Bigger the crowd, the bigger we are. Cause the internet changes the line, cause they don't want us divine. From the human race, always on the case, ending up getting chased. Now we're standing in chains. Flashback, being black, reality hits back. Your system was whack. I'm trying to find a way to change it. Because nara lika nama balandan, wala lika yun malaya chukum nama. Bitchuman go mala balanya bili jama. Bring it deep, wala dual na purumanga. Egurkum na purungal nga nali bili miri tien ani tika marijuana. Na purlika buna mirna, anja wanna. Wanna be as good as me, boy, better practice. Step back with the power of my blackness. Wanna be as good as me, boy, better practice. Step back with the power of my blackness.
Can't stop me now. You can bring me down. I'm on cloud nine. I'm not coming down. Can't stop me now. You can bring me down. I'm on cloud nine. I'm not coming down. Can't stop me now. You can bring me down. I'm on cloud nine. I'm not coming down. Can't stop me now. You can bring me down. I'm on cloud nine. I'm not coming down.
I'm not coming down.
Can't stop me now.
Can't stop me.
You can bring me down.
You can't bring me
I'm
down.
I'm on cloud nine.
I'm on cloud
I'm
nine.
I'm not coming down.
I'm not coming
can't
down.
Stop me now.
Can't stop me.
You can bring me down.
Can't bring me
I'm
down.
On cloud nine.
I'm on cloud nine.
I'm not coming down.
I'm not coming down. You can bring me down. I'm not coming down. Can't stop me.
Yes, an awesome song there. Baker Boy with Cloud Nine. Yes, you're on Urban Dreaming 94.9. The time is 8:28, and currently we are with our special guest, BB Backhouse, who's from the Fed Square. He's a creative producer of Fed Square, and he's been doing amazing work with the 1967 referendum of the 50th anniversary.
Yeah, if you are just joining us, we are very lucky to have BB in studio with us. Just to fill you in on what he's done, it's taken 3 years, but we've got the Indigenous flags, the Aboriginal flag, and the Torres Strait Islander flag flying full time down there, which is a very incredible milestone for Melbourne, for Fed Square, and for our mobs. What happened was that last week we spoke to Bernard Namuk Jr. as Australia celebrated the 25 years since the design of the Torres Strait Islander flag. And now we are here in Reconciliation Week. We are celebrating so many great things, milestones for the Indigenous people. And having BB here is very exciting for us. What's happening Reconciliation Week-wise at Fed Square?
Well, what isn't happening is the better question, I think. There's literally something happening every day. I guess to sum it up, we Federation Square created a consortium of Reconciliation Week members, you know, different cultural and civic organisations around Melbourne, consisting also of some of our tenants there, like the National Gallery and ACME and SBS. And so what we did was we created an inaugural program, which will now be in an annual thing for Reconciliation Week every year, and we called it We Here Now. You know, we are the people of this country. Here is where we are on this land and on this country and on this earth, and now is when we want change, and now is when we want recognition and you know, advancements for our mob. So we've had the Brooke Andrews exhibition at the National Gallery of Victoria, The Right to Offend is Sacred. And for Reconciliation Week, the NGV are also offering some free guided tours of that exhibition. ACME have a full Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander-focused screen program in their Mediatek all week. Some incredible films like Mabo and Satellite Boy, etc. And they're also...
good film, that one, by the way.
Great film. Thursday morning, there is, at 10 a.m. at ACME, in their Mediatek, they're doing a special screening of Satellite Boy, where they're also... Mabo, where they're also doing an educational presentation and program for that. So, you know, an open panel discussion. What else have we got? Tomorrow night we've got a movie night in the square on our main screen. It's called Screaming Now, and we'll have two great films. One is Spear with the Bangara Dance Company, And that's followed by Barbecue Area, the great mockumentary from
Michelle Torres.
I saw that in year 10. That was my was my history lesson in year 10.
That's how Kaijin,
that one. It's a great film. so that's happening tomorrow night in the square.
Casey Donovan.
Yeah, Casey performed at the flag raising on Saturday.
Yeah, she was deadly, eh?
Mm, yeah, she did.
She's always deadly.
Everyone knows the rendition of Heroes that she did at the Logies this year. We were lucky enough for her to re-perform that on Saturday, so that was really special. There is an incredible exhibition inside the Koori Heritage Trust at the moment called The Black Matriarchy by The Real Black Tings, which is Gabby Briggs and Erika Wally. So if you haven't seen that, make sure you head along there and look at it. It's incredibly moving. It's beautiful. It's very provocative. It's absolutely stunning. And I think the other notable thing to mention is this Saturday on the 25th anniversary of the Mabo decision, we have a Mabo Day family and community picnic down on the Birradung Ma. We've got some incredible Torres Strait Islander musicians and some food offerings and different family activities.
Food.
Yeah.
Nothing like good, deadly blackfella tucker there. So, you know, someone's beeping away there. Cajun. Okay, guys. So, just so you know, there's no excuse, really. There's so much going on, isn't there? And, I personally, like I said, I missed the actual day of the 50th anniversary raising of the flag, so I feel like it's my duty to make sure I go to these events and go to as many as possible from here on.
Yeah, my best advice is just to explore the site and discover what's on. It's the best way to do it.
Cool. So in regards to your guest, because you mentioned Gail Mabo, she was there that evening. Mm. How special was that?
It was really special. Her and I did an interview on SBS, and I sat there just listening to what she had to say, and she's a very strong and intelligent woman. She is carrying, you know, I don't want to use this word, but the responsibility of her people, and the legacy of her father, and that's what drives her. She understood and she acknowledged and she recognized what her father stood for and the changes that he wanted to accomplish and see in his life, which, you know, sadly he didn't get to see. But she understands that now she has taken on his responsibility as her own. And so to see her just driving and fighting for this change in community, it's incredible. And I was just so humbled to have these opportunities to sit down, cup of tea, yarn with her and just hear different stories. And she's amazing.
Yeah, she's an amazing woman. And she's also just got the wickedest sense of humour. And knowing that she's also got an arts background as well, she's a visual artist, she's a performing artist, she's a dancer, she's done, you know, a bit of singing as well. And she's, I guess, yeah, like you said, this responsibility of her being brought up, you know, in such a political, I guess, time with her father going through and pushing for the Mabo decision. I think there's a thing of knowing that our mob, you know, like he's done a lot of great things for our people. And he's a Torres Strait Islander man, you know, who's basically, in a sense, claimed sovereignty for land. And it's like, wow, that is so admirable. And, you know, there are ways that we should be able to do the same. You know, there are ways that we can do this. And it's obviously people power, isn't it?
Hmm. Well, there's never, I mean, you're standing on the shoulders of giants with someone like him, and there's still so much to do. You know, there was that thing that people said that native title is not land rights, and it's true. It's a form of rights. It's better than what there was before, but there's still so much to do. And yeah, I mean, it's, as you say, BB, it's a legacy that motivates you to keep going, because there is so much to do, and you just feel humbled, proud, so many things to think, you know, her personally, but everyone. The whole country, you know, affected by that decision about what we do with that investment and where we take that is, you know, it's a question you just, it's inescapable.
Yeah, and it's something that not just on Saturday, but every day for the rest of my life is something that I'm definitely going to carry with me. You know, the essence and the context of what he fought for and what he lived for and ultimately died for.
beautiful, beautiful man, beautiful journey, and he's done amazing things for our mob. And I think it just goes to show that we can do anything, basically, with the power of one as well, you know. So I think that's a really nice note to finish off with. And thank you so much for your time, BB.
Thank you for having me.
I think no worries. And I guess it's just really looking at, you know, planting the seeds of future leaders of tomorrow. Stay tuned, guys. You're on Urban Dreaming 94.9, and we've got some deadly music coming up for you.
Your mouth, keep on giving.
We're going to lead on to the next interview, which is in very close in relation to what we're going to be discussing, and that's the Uluru Statement. And these guys actually went out there last week. There's a whole lot of mob that went out there and had a really full-on, I guess, a gathering and meeting time in regards to whether, you know, we're going to be fighting and continuing on with the treaty. So this is something that's about just around the corner, guys, so stay tuned. We'll be with you in a moment. Urban Dreaming, 94.9.
Your mouth, keep on giving till you just can't give. Getting weaker by the night, can't find a reason, no reason to live. Where he's good with his bad, where he's good with his bad, but you know it's not even. Gonna take him back again. Still you forgive him. Black woman, black woman, rolling river, humiliation and torture. Still you believe that he was the right man. Where you keep dry. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes, an amazing artist. That's Emma Donovan there.
Black Woman.
Yes, beautiful song. So, guys, just on the line very soon with us is Mr. Michael Anderson. And before we do go into the interview, I just want to make sure we mention the statement of the Uluru Statement from the Heart. So we gathered at the 2017 National Constitution Convention, coming from all points of the southern sky, make this statement from the heart. Our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes were the first sovereign nations of the Australian continent and its adjacent islands, and possessed it under our own laws and customs. This our ancestors did according to the reckoning of our culture, from the creation, according to the common law from the time immemorial, and according to science more than 60,000 years ago. The sovereignty is a spiritual notion, the ancestral tie between the land or Mother Nature and the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who were born therefrom, remain attached thereto, and must one day return thither to be united with our ancestors.
This link is the basis of the ownership of the soil, or better, of sovereignty. It has never been ceded or extinguished and coexists with the sovereignty of the Crown. How could it be otherwise? The peoples possessed a land for 60 millennia, and this sacred link disappears from world history in merely the last 200 years. With substantive constitutional change and structural reform, we believe this ancient sovereignty can shine through as a fuller expression of Australia's nationhood. Proportionally, we are the most incarcerated people on the planet. We are not an innately criminal people. Our children are alienated from their families at unprecedented rates. This cannot be because we have no love for them, and our youth languish in detention in obscene numbers. They should be our hope for the future. These dimensions of our crisis tell plainly the structural nature of our problem. This is the torment of our powerlessness.
We seek constitutional reforms to empower our people and take a rightful place in our own country. When we have power over our destiny, our children will flourish. They will walk in two worlds and their culture will be a gift to their country. We call for the establishment of the First Nations voice enshrined in the Constitution. Makarrata is the culmination of our agenda, the coming together after a struggle. It captures our aspirations for a fair and truthful relationship with the people of Australia and a better future for our children based on justice and self-determination. We seek a Makarrata Commission to supervise a process of agreement-making between governments and First Nations and truth-telling about our history. In 1967, we were counted. In 2017, we seek to be heard. We leave base camp and start our trek across this vast country. We invite you to walk with us in a movement of the Australian people for a better future.
Gila Michael Anderson, a prominent Aboriginal and Aboriginal land rights activist, is the leader of the Yuralayli people of northwest New South Wales. Hopefully I pronounced that correctly, Uncle. After studying law, he worked at the New South Wales Office of Public Prosecutions and later taught political sciences in the universities of New England and Newcastle. On Australia Day in 1972, he was one of our four Aboriginal activists who set up the original tent embassy opposite to the old Parliament House building. Anderson remains active on land rights and other Indigenous issues. And right now in the studio, we have him on the phone, that is, Michael Anderson. Hello, Michael.
How you doing?
Good, good. Just before we begin, I want to really just say thank you so much for your time. I know how busy man you are.
Well, mate, I'm just relaxing watching RT, the Russian news, to see what else is going on around the world. Yeah, there's trouble everywhere, isn't it?
Yes, there is indeed. Just so you know, this is our show, Urban Dreaming, and we've got about three other guests with me at the moment. So, and they'll probably be asking you a few questions as well. So we've got Maddie.
Hello.
And we've got Declan.
Hello, Matt. How are you doing?
Good, mate. Good. Thanks for being on.
You're welcome.
Hi, Uncle. It's Declan.
And Declan, is it?
Declan. Hi.
Yeah. How are you doing?
Good. Good. It's great to have you here.
So for those who listen, it's funny how we instantly call our elders uncle and aunties. So for the listeners who don't understand, we aren't actually blood related, but we would do that for respect. And sorry to interrupt, but I just had to mention that.
And I mean, this is someone who really deserves respect. I mean, having come from the Aboriginal Tent Embassy and being the last surviving member, I mean, it's really, it's wonderful really to have you here, Michael.
Yeah, it's good to be. I'm just happy to be still around. It's sad that my comrades are no longer with us because they certainly would be buying into what's currently going on. I can assure you of that.
Well, I'd love to really to start there because not to be too provocative, but it was interesting that on Q&A on Monday, Noel Pearson mentioned that the constitutional change that would include an Indigenous voice to Parliament would be like a tent embassy set in the Constitution or in stone as a kind of highest law of the land, of the British law that you could have. How do you feel about something like that, the idea that an Indigenous voice to Parliament in the Constitution would be a strong structure that, unlike ATSIC or other bodies, could not be sort of changed by the whim of a new government or new policies?
Well, I hate to say this, but given the colonial mindset of the Australian government and those in political leadership, I unfortunately tend to agree with, that racist Deputy Prime Minister. What's his name?
Barnaby Joyce.
Barnaby Joyce, when he says in your dreams, you know. Quite frankly, the colonials are not going to let that happen because they have to work out their own mess right now because, you see, the United Nations understands very clearly that Australia is not a nation state in its own right. They have a right to govern themselves independent of England, but their sovereignty is the British sovereignty, and that the parliaments of Australia, both Commonwealth and states, their constitutions remain acts of the British Parliament. And when you look at all the laws passed in this country, they rule in right of the Crown. And it's somewhat, a bit of a misnomer that that we talk about Australia as a nation state. Australia are, in fact, listed in the United Nations for decolonisation, but it's decolonisation from the British. So the United Nations is demanding that Australia, at some stage, sooner than later, become a republic independent of England totally. And all this talk about constitutional inclusion right now is to grant them some form of genuine legal status because they cannot achieve that independent international recognition as a nation state if they do not include in their resetting of their relationships with the native population, they cannot achieve true meaningful and legal status as an independent nation state because they are, in fact, by their own definition, an occupying state.
So I'd love to ask, Uncle, is your sense that the problem is not so much who's in power? For example, although we've got a conservative state in politics when we have people like Barnaby Joyce and Mark McGowan just in WA, they're the new Labor Prime Minister, mm-hmm. just coming out and sort of saying no before they even know what's on the table or before any change happens, is your sense that historically, since 1788, there's always been the frustration of things being too much at the whim of a colonial sort of system that gives with the one hand and takes away with the other? For example, we can see that even those who might show goodwill in the government, at the same time we have ongoing Northern Territory intervention, we have still double incarceration rates since the 1991 Black Deaths in Custody report. We've got, new stolen generations too. There's a suggestion with the number of kids being taken away right now. It's is your sense that really it's that people will keep being frustrated unless they look beyond the sort of current establishment to things like international law and the United Nations or other states for support?
What I don't understand, you know, what's frustrating for me and many of my, you know, former Black Power colleagues is the fact that the people today who are pushing for these changes are not familiar and truly understanding of international law, of liberation struggles around the world, understanding the true nature of politics, understanding what the scourge of colonialism is. They do not understand the international ambitions by the United Nations and other nation states who have been liberated from colonialism. And they do not understand how Australia are, in fact, maintaining an oppressive rule over Aboriginal people and the reasons why that is so. And we have people running around in this country attempting to liberate us by way of constitutional recognition and or other arrangements without fully understanding the true legal and political background to what they're doing. And they don't have a big picture. And when we did the treaty, the Makarrata, I was the director of the research for the National Aboriginal Conference when Malcolm Fraser agreed to negotiate with his government as the people representing non-Aboriginal Australia and the elected national Aboriginal body called the National Aboriginal Conference representing Aboriginal people, where we were negotiating a treaty. The preconditions for the negotiation of that treaty from 79 to 85 was on the condition that the government accepts the fact that sovereignty was never ceded and that we maintained proprietary interest in the land and its natural resources. Now, Malcolm Fraser agreed to that, and all that research that we did back then and the knowledge that those Aboriginal people had, and they were elders, most of them, had in regards to what they were after.
Uncle Michael, sorry to interrupt. I really am so sorry. We had literally run out of time, but I think we need to continue this conversation. So what we'll do is next week, guys, stay tuned for Urban Dreaming, and we'll be back with Uncle Michael Anderson. And we'll be in touch, Uncle. Unfortunately, yeah, we're way out of time. We wish we had more time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
We will definitely be back next week.
Yeah, you should have told me. I would have been, yeah, okay, I thought we were having a conversation. But anyway.
No, we definitely are. I would like to continue this conversation. Okay.
Well, okay.
Thank you, Uncle. Thank you very much for your time. That's Uncle Michael Anderson. And, we're out of time, unfortunately, like I said. So saying goodbye, this is Sarami.
This is Matt.
It's Declan.
Take care, guys. All the best. And
thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.